You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in store, on social media, and beyond. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/crimes, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/crimes to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/crimes.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Voices for Justice is a podcast that uses adult language and discusses sensitive and potentially triggering topics, including violence, abuse, and murder. This podcast may not be appropriate for younger audiences. All parties are innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Some names have been changed or omitted per their request or for safety purposes. Listener discretion is advised.
My name is Sarah Turney, and this is Voices for Justice. Last time on Voices for Justice, we took a break from the timeline and heard the first half of an interview with Alyssa's biological father, Stephen Strom, and his wife, Karen. We discussed Alyssa's early childhood until Alyssa was adopted by our father, Michael Turney, at about 2.5 years old. We discussed the adoption, the story of him supposedly attempting to run my father over with a car, and more. So if you haven't listened to part one, definitely go back and listen to that before this episode. All right, let's jump right back into my interview with Alyssa's biological father, Stephen Strom. I want to talk about my hesitation in having you on, which we've talked about. You know, we had a phone call in December of 2019 where you asked to come on the podcast. You said, I want to come and I want to tell my story. And I said, okay, we can do that, but I want to talk about it all, which I was specifically referring to. You know, you brought it up that my dad always said that you were a violent man, mm-hmm. that you weren't a good guy. You know, I heard these stories of you trying to run him over with a car. You know, I have this picture right here of you that my dad says, oh, that was Steve when he was in prison. And then, you know, I think the most damning of it all is my brothers and what my brothers say, because I can believe all day that what my dad says is bullshit. You know, I have all these examples of knowing that he lied to me. But when it comes to my brothers, that's when it's different, right? So like James, you know, he was, I think, 13 or 14 when he says that he remembers the car almost hitting my dad. I think he says he was on like the roof of our house or whatever. And, you know, that could be a child just seeing it and maybe you drove really close to him or whatever. And we don't have to debate it here, but I did want to bring up why I was hesitant. And it was that combined with John. Right? Mostly John. Yeah. And how John says that he remembers being abused. And so in my mind, you know, that scares me. And it made me really hesitant to let you come on here and tell your story. And there's also a huge part of me that feels like, what would Alyssa do? How would Alyssa feel? How do I best respect Alyssa? And it's not that she wouldn't love you or not care about you, but I think, you know, her first question would be bratty, right? Like any teenage girl that doesn't have their father in their lives that all of a sudden comes back in, there's a little bit of that angst, right? It's like, where were you? What
Why
happened?
Weren't you here? Yeah.
So I feel that too. I feel that for her. I feel all these things. But then of course we've gotten close.
We've gotten close, but that's why I was hesitant. And I don't know if you want to say anything about what I heard growing up. You don't have to, but I did want to state that for the record. That's why I didn't have you on originally. That's why in the podcast, you'll hear me say basically, you know, that Alyssa was adopted and that you weren't her life. And I leave it very simply at that.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to respond to it. And you know what? I'm gonna start with this picture that you have of me sitting with my hands against the fence at a playground where I took John over to play on the swing sets and stuff. And I was sitting there and Barbara took a picture of me. I was pretty young. I think I was 27 there.
Yeah.
And so, or somewhere like that. And it was just a simple thing. It was over at the playground, and that's all that was. So I have to laugh at that because only Mike would use this as a thing to say that I was in prison.
And we'll put the picture online so you guys can see it.
It's hilarious. I mean, you know, so I get a kick out of that. As far as John is concerned, John hit his mother when he was little, and I had to step in and I had to say no hitting. But I never laid my hand on John ever and spanked him ever. What he left me when he was 7 years old. I'm going to tell you the only time that I saw John after that was that I was showing up at, I mean, I was driving down their road and going to the shopping, going shopping at a grocery store. He showed up. I saw him in the parking lot as I drove in. He was driving on his bicycle with two other boys. I don't know if it was friends or brothers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they were on a bicycle because I didn't know the kids. I didn't know the boys at all. So what happened was they drove up. John saw me. He got off his bike. He ran over, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy." And I gave him a big hug. And I said, "What's up, buddy?" And he goes, "We're just riding our bike over here to get some pop or something." I don't know what they were going to do. They were riding bikes. And I said, "So what's going on with you?" And he said, "Oh, nothing." And I said, are everything going fine? Are you being a good boy?" He said, "Yeah." And I gave him another big hug, and he gave me a big hug. And I said, "Well, I'll see you soon again." And that was it.
Yeah.
And John was 7 at that time. And 7 or 8, because it was a while after we separated.
Yeah.
So I can't remember exactly what he was. But John, I can tell you right now that Mike is a person that plants things in people to make other people look bad.
Sure.
And I think that Mike planted this seed in John's ear that I abused him. But if you ask any of my friends that were around at the time, they can tell you that I loved John like he was my own. And I did things with him. We went out on dune buggies. We went out in three-wheelers. We did stuff together. Now, was I his father and not his friend? Yes. So I reprimand him, but you didn't have to reprimand John. He melted, and he probably still does. He's probably got that personality. He melted. You just have to say something to him like, "You better cool or you better stop," and he'd stop it.
Yeah.
You didn't need it spanked, John. He wasn't that type. So I think I don't think Barbara would do that. I knew Barbara well enough that she wouldn't plant something false in him, but I think Mike planted into him from the time he was 7 that I abused him, and that's why I'm not taking him. He also said, "Why didn't you take him? Why didn't you adopt him when he was?" And we already talked about that, of why I wouldn't adopt him,
right?
Because of his own real father.
Right.
It had nothing to do with anything but that. If later on down the road, if John said to me, "I want you to adopt me," and he came to me, I would do it. I've done it.
Yeah.
But I think he needed to know his real father, but he didn't get to see his real father. So that was disheartening too. And I'm sure that John suffers from a lot of problems from his father, John, then me, and then dealing with this thing.
When you mentioned the adoption thing, which comes from an excerpt that I sent you from one of my dad's letters from prison. So this is, gosh, how many, like 20 something years later that he's still talking about you. And what I find interesting is that he like implanted it in me. Like I wasn't even born when you were around, yet I still have all these stories that I like inherited from you. So I want to read that excerpt really quick that
ahead.
I sent you. Again, this is from my dad in prison. And his handwriting is so bad. So it takes a little bit to read. And I don't know everything he's referencing. I'm just reading it. So the letter from prison says, "It is good John is getting involved in Steve's lies. This is the way he acted when he called me after I married your mom. He was quick-tempered and very intimidating for your mom until that last night
when she attacked him, slapping him because he brought Alyssa and John home drunk and told John that he did not love him and he was not his son. One thing you might want to bring up was that he was married to your mom for 5 years, but never adopted John. I was married to your mom for less than a year, and I adopted Alyssa and John.
Well, again, that's Mike.
Yeah.
That's the true Mike Turney coming out. He lies about things to make himself look good and everybody else look bad. So the whole thing comes down to is that I never abused John, I never abused Barbara, I never abused Alyssa, and I have lots of friends that lived with us around in the neighborhood that still live in that neighborhood that I come and visit and know, and they know the truth.
Yeah.
So Mike will say anything that makes him look like a big boy, a big guy, and me to look bad. But it's not just me he does that about. He does that about everybody. He's his own worst enemy.
Yeah. I mean, he accuses my oldest brother, Rhett, of planting the bombs in the house and forging this manifesto.
Yeah.
He literally says, you know, my son can recreate my handwriting and that he was in the house. So it's really insane.
I it would bother me, except for it's so laughable to hear Mike speak, because I never spoke to Mike. Why would I speak to Mike? Why would I have anything to speak to him about at all? I would Barbara, but I didn't even need to speak to her, because by the time I left and then he adopted her and all this happened, it was like beyond that.
Yeah.
There was no reason at all.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
So one of the things that I brought up is that I've been told that you had plenty of money, you know, when it comes to the adoption fees or, you know, that legal battle that would cost upwards of $50,000. When I spoke to my mother's friends about that, they said, really? Because Steve had plenty of money.
I don't know where they got this from, but when we moved here, I think we had $9,000 in the bank when we moved to Phoenix, Barbara and John and I.
Right.
And that all went for rent for a long time. And I had a little business that would paint, sign business that really was not doing that good. I mean, it was okay, but it didn't good. And that was when Barbara went back to work, because it wasn't doing good.
Sure.
And so she went back to work, and my house went into foreclosure.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't afford to pay for it by myself. And some of it was that I didn't care anymore. I mean, that's honest.
Sure.
I didn't care anymore about material things.
Yeah.
I only cared about my daughter at that point, and John too.
Yeah.
I always thought about John. I have my whole life. And it's too bad that John hates me the way he does now, because I still love him. But I'm not going to push myself on John. If he wants to believe that, what Michael told him, he can believe it.
Yeah.
That's fine. Because I'm a big boy and I can take it. And I was not perfect in this situation. I was part of Barbara and I breaking up, but I didn't have an affair on Barbara. She had one on me.
Right.
So
I think people probably just hear house in Malibu. They hear about a Corvette and they think money.
I know.
But that could mean that you were, you know, I see it all the time in Scottsdale. You know, people are driving $60,000 cars, but what people don't realize is that maybe that is everything they actually have in the bank is trying to make that payment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty much that way. The house we were building in Malibu was, I was building it for a friend of mine. And so with a friend of mine, and it ended up, it was back when the interest rate was 21%. So we ended up losing that.
Goodness gracious.
Only I got lucky and got $9,000 out of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I worked a whole year for $9,000.
Yeah. Wow.
And then we had the Corvette, and we turned the Corvette in when we left California. And drove my old red International Harvester truck with a trailer to Phoenix to start our new life.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's comical the way people perceive things and the way they see it. We never had money. I can tell you one thing. I really do think that Mike schmoozed her, Barbara.
Yeah, we know he did. Yeah. We know he did. Yeah. Sending flowers every single day. Yeah. He was really over the top.
He's playing his guitar for her. He was, and you know what? That's okay. That's okay because that's what men do. But he also embellishes things beyond embellish.
Yeah.
He likes to lie about things, and he said he had a great income and he had all this, and all he had was what do you call it? Security.
Social injury. Security. Disability. Yeah. Disability. At that time, injury. He was working,
yeah,
but.
Yeah. It didn't last long, each job.
No, it really
And I
didn't.
Knew some people that worked with him, and they said he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He would show up late and then blame it on them instead of himself.
You know, I believe that. Yeah, from what I've experienced growing up with him and trying to deflect the blame that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, all these horrible rumors about you aside, I think what really won me over, because at first I was hesitant, right? Like,
No, I would want you to be, yeah.
Because yeah, of course I'm defensive over my siblings. Yes, of course yes. I am. Look at my entire podcast. Yes, I'm very defensive over my siblings. Hi. Uh-huh. But yeah, I think what really won me over, and it took some time, right? Because like...
Oh no, yeah, I could feel it. And I knew that it was going to take time, and I didn't. Yeah. And I didn't push it because... I wanted you to find out on your own a little bit about me. And, you know, if I was in prison, don't you think you could look that up and find out if I was in prison before? I've never been in prison. The only time I was ever arrested when Mike had me arrested.
Yeah. To be fair, I haven't checked you, which, probably doesn't show a lot for my sleuthing skills. But
no, you can check
Welcome to my home. I haven't checked. No, it's fine.
You can check me all you want. It's fine. You know, I doubt if my wife would be with me that I'm married to right now if I was been in prison.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
She's not the type. So
I don't think people realize that we've gone on this journey together almost, because you first came in my life through the Missing Alyssa podcast. You interviewed with her, Otavia, and she reached out to me and said, I'm going to interview Alyssa's biological dad. And I was like, whoa, lady, like, you don't know. You don't know what I've heard about him. Like, you know, I was pretty upset. I was pretty upset.
Yeah, I know you.
Yeah. And when I heard it, I didn't think that she was rough enough on you, to be honest. I was like, oh, she didn't ask the questions I would have asked. She wouldn't have done that.
She didn't know the questions. That's the problem.
But here I am. I mean, I don't feel like I'm being particularly tough on you, but that's because of what has transpired. You've really gained my trust after all this. You know, like I said, you interviewed for the Missing Alyssa podcast, and then I was in a deal with a media company. Then we were possibly going to do this documentary, this whole thing, whatever. And I reached out to you, and I was like, hey, will you be involved in this? And you were like, absolutely, no problem. And then it kind of developed from there to where we're at. And I think we're in a much better spot now. And I think that's because of what we've kind of gone through in terms of the police.
Well, one thing is I think we've gone into similar situations where we've been frustrated, hurt, damaged, and we're both been there. You can't say anybody else can say that.
Right.
But us too. Now, the boys may be too. I don't know. But I definitely know that you being Alyssa's sister, she loved you and you loved her. So there's a lot of pain involved that you and I carry and will always carry. We'll never get over that. But the big thing here is that it started out where Sarah believed her father, which is what any young person would believe, their father, because he let her do everything and have everything.
Yeah.
But then if you read what he let Alyssa do and the way that things went in the household, even with Barbara, then you start to see what was going on there. And finally, Sarah realized that, what was going on, and she jumped ship. And she didn't jump ship too fast, though. She investigated it. She looked into things. She found out what was going on. And then I started to hear Sarah more and more, and I realized this girl is really on Alyssa's side. Because that's all it amounts to. It's, she cannot be on my side.
Right.
She needs to be on Alyssa's side to get justice for Alyssa. We need to find out where she's buried, what he did. And so as she did, I started to realize I have compassion for Sarah. She seems like my daughter because I lost mine. And she was my daughter's sister. And they have Barbara's blood in her, and my daughter has Barbara's blood in her. And guess what? I started to love her and care about her.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's really what won me over was the fact that you're here for Alyssa. And a lot of people that have been supportive of me my entire life are not here for Alyssa. So that's really what it boils down to is like, I don't think if you had bad intentions or didn't care about Alyssa that you would be here, because you're sticking your neck out. Not everything that's been said about you is wonderful. It's not like you come on here with, you know, the stellar story of look at me, look how sad I am. You know, you tell it like it is. And I really respect that. And like I said, the fact that you are fighting for Alyssa now. And I, like I said, I don't think people realize that we've kind of come together to speak to the police, because what they also don't realize is that at a certain point, you know, they start updating you and keeping me out of the loop. Like, they're like, okay, we're just going to talk to this guy now. Forget about Sarah, who's been here for like 20 years or whatever.
And then tell
them what I said to them. Yeah. Yeah. No. And we were at a meeting October 2019 where you said to their faces, you said, listen, you need to update Sarah before you update anybody else. You need to go through Sarah and stop going through me, which is exactly what I told the police also. But they weren't as receptive to me as they were to you.
Yeah, but still, they finally came around and started going through you because I got upset with them. And I also said that you knew more than I know about the whole story. And so I couldn't help Alyssa as like you could,
right?
Like you have. And so that was really, really important. And, you know, Karen and I came upon this thought process of listening to you on your podcasts. On after we listened to all the things that were going on, we're like, our head, our brain turned around backwards. It was like we couldn't even comprehend all the things that have happened on the podcast that you say have happened, because we weren't involved. We don't have access to all the paperwork and all that stuff. So we were like, Karen and I were like, wow, we feel so sorry for Sarah. Do you realize what she's been through in her life? We haven't even been through half of that. Yes, we have to mourn. We've had to mourn over Alyssa, but just the mental abuse, everything that took place in your life, because there's a certain amount of abuse when you neglect someone too and give them what they don't need as a parent.
Yeah. I mean, I still feel like I'm the lucky one, right? Yes. So it's hard for me to feel like a victim when we have Alyssa, but I certainly understand where that's
coming
from.
Your manipulating environment alone with Michael would have been hard to live with, because after a point you realized what he was doing to you, and it's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was certainly just the way I was raised, and I could recognize it from a young age that he was lying to me and trying to manipulate me. And I think I just ignored it or whatever.
Well, yeah, of course you did, because you're a child and you're getting what you want. And that's pretty normal.
Oh, exactly.
But then someday you grow up. And if you really grow up and you become a real adult of your own, you realize you never want to do that to your own children, and you never want that done to you.
Yeah.
So it was not easy, and we know it. And we see, we didn't go through that. She had great parents, my wife, Karen, and I had great parents. We never went through that kind of thing.
Yeah.
My dad would say to me, son, you got to be careful when you do this or that. He wouldn't yell at me or beat me or manipulate me in any way.
Yeah.
And I grew up knowing not to manipulate my friends. That's why I never abused John. I never manipulated him. He was a sweet little boy. You didn't have to.
Yeah.
You know, and my father loved John, too. He knew John and took John places and did things with John, too.
Yeah.
And he called him grandpa. But anyway, do you have any more questions?
Well, yeah. Right? Yes. Well, so I wanted to discuss what you thought. So when you enter back in the picture, right, you're talking to police, so you're involved in the case now. Like, what is your theory on what happened to Alyssa? I'm sure everybody would like to know.
My theory is, and I don't know exactly, but, and you know what? I don't really base it on theory. She was my daughter, so she's my blood, and I have a sense for this, that she was abused. Michael was abusing my daughter, and she was 17 and getting ready to tell on him, and he did something to her.
Yeah.
What he did to her, where he put her, I don't know, and I will never know. But I sensed it, that there was that, and Mike is guilty of that.
Yeah.
Don't know what else to say about it.
I know. I do the same thing. Like, people want you to theorize all day about what happened or where she is, and you can't.
Number one, you can't theorize, because that's just speculation.
Right.
And it's not a home. It's a real thing. And so you can't speculate about things. And I don't know. I wasn't there. So I don't know. All I know is the way he lived his life and the things that he's done and said leads me to believe that he did something to her, because she was going to tell on him.
Right.
And she did tell some people, and the police won't even take that.
Exactly.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Exactly. So that leads me into the next discussion of the police. So you're involved now, right? And you have seen what the police say. You've said what they email. You've said that, you know, you've seen the discrepancies. So I would love to know how you feel about that, because we're about to get into the podcast where it's all about the police and what they did and what they didn't do. So you've seen it firsthand. What do you think about the police?
I was willing to say things to them that they, and they were willing to take it from me because I was a biological father.
Right.
So when I went to the police station and I said, you need to take care of this now because you didn't take care of it back in 2001. And they said, and they looked right at me and they said, you're right. We didn't. And so that's when Detective, say their names?
Yeah. You can say all their names.
Okay. Detective Anderson and Detective Summershoe said they will not give up on this.
Yeah.
But the police department lied to me and they separated them so that they couldn't work on this case anymore. And then they kept putting in people who were, let's say, inadequate. That's being very nice.
Yeah.
To do the job and had no clue whatever went on in 2001 and beyond. They didn't know. And so I know Sarah was lied to because I was lied to in small things. So they were lying to her in big things because she knew much more than I knew. And so I know they lied. I know that they're running scared. And I think that they're afraid that we're going to sue them.
They should be.
Yeah.
You know, it's my understanding that we have all rights to sue, absolutely, yeah. for a variety of reasons.
For them not doing their job, number one. And number two, for them to keep putting new people in position and then they have to review it and they don't even know the whole facts of the case and they come in and they're just dummies.
Yeah. I mean, in your experience, have any of the new detectives or agents or, you know, because we get different commanders and sergeants and detectives and whatever. Do any of the new people, do you think that they're really briefed on the case? Because I don't. I don't think that anybody other than Summershoe and Anderson.
I even asked this latest one. What's her name?
Gilligan.
Gilligan. I even asked her if she knew about the case and she didn't. Said she has never reviewed the case.
Right.
So she doesn't know either. Yeah. She just, what she does is she calls Summershoe up and Anderson and ask them questions about it instead of letting them take it over.
Right.
Which is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. But I don't have much faith in the Phoenix Police Department anyway, because they've let a lot of things happen in this city and go unchecked. And their whole job is to seek justice for people. And I think there's times when they do it if they got enough political pressure, and there's times when they don't do anything.
Right.
And I don't know that it's the detectives so much as it is probably the management.
I agree. I think if it were up to Summershoe and Anderson, that this would have been prosecuted a very long time
they
ago.
They did a great job, Summershoe and Anderson. And that's so my whole thing is that it's hard for Sarah and I to trust anything that goes on at any time when they say they're doing something. We just sit back and wait, and then we respond. I ask her what she's going to do. And she says, and will you do this? And that's what we do, is respond that way. Because that way we're both on. They don't know, and they'll probably find out from this podcast, they don't know that we're in cahoots together.
Right.
They don't know that we get along and we're there for one thing, justice for Alyssa.
Yeah. Well, because I fought it. I fought it. When they were like, oh, we're updating him. I was like, absolutely not. You're not updating him. I said, we don't know this person. He doesn't have legal rights. Like, why are you not updating me? I got really upset. That's where the whole trained detective thing came from.
Yep.
Is because when I complained, they said, ma'am, are you a trained detective? But are you a trained detective? Ma'am, are you a trained detective? Over and over again.
Yeah.
Which is why I have trained detective merch now, because I'm spiteful in that way. But it's like a peaceful protest. You know what I mean? Like, I feel that I am very respectful to them. And I think people don't realize that because I am so radical online and I speak very frankly about it. I don't think they realize that when we're in a room together, I am yes ma'am, no ma'am, but I also stand up for that. You know what I mean? I forget what they said in that last meeting. I think it was something to the effect of like, I always make sure you call back. And I was like, I've never gotten a single call from you, Mr. Chorus, you know, with all due respect. Mm-hmm. But I don't think people realize that I don't go in there like an insane person and yell at them. But
she doesn't. I've been in meetings with her. But my whole thing is this, and I have this philosophy. And when I have this philosophy, then it makes it hard for me to not to say what's on my mind. And that is, you can't fix stupid. And sometimes they come in and they are so stupid and they don't have a clue on anything about Alyssa and her life and what happened, the whole thing. And then they expect us to believe them on stuff. How can we believe them when they don't even know what they're talking about?
Right. Well, so, and their intentions scare me, right? So you actually came down for this meeting. It was my birthday, October 15th, 2019.
Yep.
And you drove down from Washington for this meeting. You told them you were driving down. You know, my brother James called in. I was there. And we're like 15 minutes through it, right? And they're like explaining, like, you know, the history of the legal system to us or whatever. Like, they're going on and on and on about different procedures and policies.
Then, and then at 15 minutes, they decide that, oh, we're done with our interview. They only gave us a half hour.
Yeah. They go, oh, well, you know, you guys, we really got to get through your questions really quick now after wasting literally like at least half of our time in that room by trying to explain policy and procedure. They then say, okay, well, we don't have a lot of time, but we're going to try to get through as many questions as possible. And then they were like kicking us out of the room. And I think we were all like, even, you know, you're like, this is extremely disappointing. Like, this is okay.
I went in their face. I mean, I told them. Yeah. I said, you know what? I'm appalled at what you guys are doing, giving us a half hour of your time.
Right.
It really blows me away that you do that. And I got a call back from Westover.
Yeah.
Westover saying that he was so sorry and all this stuff, you know. And that's when I told him, Chorus is not your man.
Yeah. Oh, he's awful.
He made a mistake. He wouldn't talk to anybody. He won't call anybody. He won't look you in the eye.
He took a phone call during our meeting.
Yeah, during our meeting, it took a phone call.
During our very short, limited time, 30 minutes only, we have to get kicked out. And they kept saying, oh, well, the room's reserved. I'm like, great, I'll talk to you next to the dumpsters.
There's other
I
rooms.
Don't care.
There's other rooms.
Trust me, I know. They have a lot of interrogation rooms. I've been in a lot of them.
That was for them to get out of it and not have to talk very long.
That's what makes me not trust them. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot, right? So, like, I remember at one point I think you text me and you're like, oh, Westover said he called you. And I'm like, cool. I don't answer their calls anymore. I only deal with them via writing.
Uh-huh.
So I emailed him. I was like, got your call. What's up? You know what I mean? Like, because I won't speak to them over the phone unless I have to.
A text or you do set something up on your phone where you can, you can listen in and have it on a recording.
Yeah, that's the point I'm at, where I really have to record it. I won't.
Because they'll say one thing and then they bring a new person and they said, oh, they never said that to you.
Right. Well, and even recently with the trained detective stuff, you know, I didn't record that, unfortunately. I was like on a break at work or whatever and returned the voicemail. And I was like, shit, this is exactly why I need to record everything or get everything in writing.
From then on, you never stopped. You didn't ever do it without a text or something in writing or email or on the phone with a recording.
Yeah. Well, because they go back. They go back and forth, you know, and yeah, I mean, there are some recent updates that we can't talk about, but there's some movement, and I don't think people realize that. You know, like, I got a call from Anderson not too long ago, and they want the home videos back, and I'm scared.
Are you going to give them to them?
I'm scared. I don't know. I'm like, I am happy to give them copies of it. I am so hesitant to say no to them, which I've never said no to any single thing.
Why you're hesitant about? What did he say to you that made you hesitant?
Exactly. So Anderson says, you know, I'm kind of in trouble. I wasn't supposed to give you back these home videos, you know, even though they're yours and I think you should have them and I think that they're being silly. But will you give them back so we can make copies? Then we'll give them back to you. And he says one of the reasons is, you know, they're seeing these clips online. They're not happy about it, but they're afraid that you might tamper with the VHS tapes in order to fit your narrative, which,
wow,
it scares me. It scares me because, one, I would obviously never do that. I don't even know how to tamper with a freaking VHS. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's ways, probably ways that they know about,
no,
right?
But what you should do is you should put them in a box and say, I have them in a lockbox and tell them that Steve Strom has them. And then if they come after me, that's okay. And then we'll do something about it at that time.
Or, like, can I watch you, like, take these tapes? Because my fear is that they're just going to say I tampered with they're going to tamper with them and say I did.
Yes.
Like, which sounds like a crazy person, but why even say that to me? No, that they're afraid I'm going to tamper?
Because you've already dealt with them and they haven't been truthful.
Yeah.
when you deal with somebody, they're not truthful, just like Michael.
Yeah.
You have a tendency to be that way. You're not dumb. You sense it.
Yeah.
We all have senses beyond what you think we do.
Right. Well, and I have lawyers I consult and things. Like, I'm not stupid. And so I ask them, you know, and they say, number one, you're never going to get those VHSs back. They are 1,000% lying to you about that. You will never see those again.
Yeah.
So definitely make copies.
I think they're right.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
I absolutely think they're right.
And it's like, I want them to have it if they need it, but that comment about me tampering with it, you know, that scares me. And I feel like...
Yeah, calling you a tamperer.
Exactly. Well, and if it comes down to it and we go to court and they say, we can't move forward with this because the VHSs have obviously been tampered with, in front of a judge, they're not going to believe me. They're going to believe the police. If it becomes my word against them, I'm never going to win that. But then, you know, it's, I weigh, am I being uncooperative? Are they going to get a search warrant just and come take them back? I don't know, but I'm scared.
I think you, first of all, you need to talk to Anderson a little bit more and find out more details. And if you have to make a copy and give them back the originals, as long as you got a copy of the way they were when you, and you have your attorney sign that, say that they're the way they were. You know what I mean? I don't think you're going to have a problem.
Get some like third party to review them first and say that like these copies match up or whatever.
Yes.
It just, I mean, it freaks me out because they've reviewed all these. It's not as if they have not seen these home videos. They reviewed all of them.
There might be more to this than we think.
That's what I'm afraid of. I don't know. And it makes me feel like a crazy person because I want to trust the police, but they've given me almost no reason to trust them.
Now, the only ones I trust is Anderson and Summershoe.
Right. When it comes from Anderson, right, which he's not assigned to the case anymore. He's not a part of the case.
Well,
not
I'm
like Summershoe is.
There's pressure in him, see, and he has. So maybe he's going to do things that he wouldn't do normally.
Right.
And if they're pressuring him. So, I don't know. I call my attorney and I say, what do you think we should do? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just so weird because they told us, like, you know, you can't really go through us anymore. You have to talk to this public relations person. Oh, yeah. But then out of the blue, I get a call from Anderson.
And do you think I once ever called their public relations person?
No, because I've done that in the past and they say no. Because they refuse to do all media. So I've dealt with their public people before.
What I mean is I call Westover, or now I call Gilligan.
Yeah.
And that's all I call. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I call no one. I email everyone and copy like the entire planet. I don't know
that
what else
it's
to
all
do.
Covered.
Yeah, exactly. And I want that trail because who can remember anyway when all this happens? But yeah, I'm excited because you're on Alyssa's side. You're a part of the fight. And I think that it's been helping because I'm not this crazy person going in there alone, screaming and ranting and raving about Alyssa. We have more people now. You and my brother James have been involved. And now it's three full-grown adults saying, listen, this is what's going on. This is what we know. What are you guys doing about it? So I'm confident. I think that there will be some movement in the future, and I think that they're at a point right now where it's sink or swim. They have to say yes or no. They have to figure it out. And I think we're getting closer, hopefully.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did want to end on a positive note, which I said in our notes, like, positive note is talking about the podcast and, you know, where you think the case is going. But I think we discussed that, right? Like, you've listened to the podcast.
I still want to say something to end the whole situation is that I want to thank you for everything that you've done for Alyssa and the podcasts and everything that are there. And it's only fair that I say this is because I haven't done anything compared to what you have done. I love Alyssa and I miss her and I want that. But if you guys out there understand that Sarah is the one that does this all, she's the one that's out there. She's the one that does it. You know, she's the one that deserves all the credit. I try to help her in what I can, and that's little because Sarah doesn't trust me. She doesn't trust anybody, but the podcasts and the media outlets, and we just see your love for your sister, Alyssa, through that.
Yeah.
And the last thing that I like to say is that I'd like all the listeners that they would to listen to a song by Cece Winans. It's called Alabaster Box. And I'm trying not to cry, but it reminds me of my baby girl. Thank you, everyone out there, and thank you, Sarah.
Next time on Voices for Justice. In August of 2009, Detective Anderson and Detective Summershoe interview my brother Rhett for the second time. And during the second round of questioning, he is much more forthcoming about what our father is really like and his thoughts on what happened to Alyssa. That report reads, on February 22, 2010, I received an email from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in reference to Alyssa's case. They sent a copy of the purported runaway note found in the home at the time of Alyssa's disappearance to John R. Schaefer, Ph.D., who conducted a statement analysis of the note. The following is his report. Well, what do you guys think? If I'm being completely honest, I still don't know what to think about what happened in the past with Stephen Strom. But I am extremely grateful that he has chosen to be a part of the fight for justice for Alyssa. And I hope that this interview has given you all more insight into Alyssa's life and case. I would of course also like to extend a very, very special thank you to Steve and his wife Karen for coming on the podcast. Voices for Justice is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Sarah Turney. If you want to learn more about Alyssa's story and how you can help with the case, visit justiceforalyssa.com. And if you love the show, it would really help if you gave me a rating and review in your podcast player. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you next time.